from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
That ain't Brent Rooker. Frankly, it ain't Jazz Chisholm. Is Taylor Ward on the margins?
Yes. Well, I would think so, because the guy slumped big time, even though he's got another year of control left.
The Taylor Ward we've heard about lately is very much on the margins.
But
Chisholm,
I think the Pirates,
Robert Jr., and Rooker are not on the margins.
I think the Pirates have also taken note of Ward's hellacious slump, because Jim Bowden wrote today that he has not heard about Ward and the Pirates lately.
God, Zeiss might have killed that one dead.
Yeah. Yeah, ever since Paul said it was on the precipice of happening, it's gone up in flames.
Well, it sounds like that's a good thing. We should be thanking Paul for it.
I agree. Next time you see Paul at the casino, shake his hand and say thank you.
In fact, that could be right now if you head down there. I mean, you hear bad on the margins, though. Before you say anything else, what's your first reaction to that? They could acquire some bats on the margin.
I think of low risk, low reward guys. That's what I think of. I think
how much better is a bat on the margin than Jack Sawinski right now?
Not much better, because Sawinski could hit 10 home runs in August for all we know. I'm not betting on it, but he's that type of player where it could happen.
Would he get to stand on second base and get slow pitch thrown to him for that?
I think of Connor Joe as a guy that's an on-the-margins hitter.
Well, no, Connor Joe's only an on-the-margins hitter if you extend him past what we know he can do. If you just say, hey, Connor, there's a lefty pitcher going today. We want you to hit. You're in. He's like, he hits it like a borderline all-star.
He's also great in April and... After
he's like
that,
a reverse.
So
he's reverse LaRoche.
So could add bats on the margins while, and then this is the next line, while trading Bailey Falter and Aroldis Chapman.
He also mentioned, though, that it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for them to at least consider, although they'd want more in return, something for Colin Holderman or David Bednar.
That was the next thing I was about to bring up.
That's the crazy one.
Of it sounds like more subtracting than adding. It doesn't sound like the additions and subtractions like give you a net positive or a zero, where they cancel each other out.
It would have to be, the only way they would equal out is if you might be subtracting two players for one who is clearly better than two. You'd have to be dealing from an area
but
of
But that's
what
not what he's
strength.
Reporting here. He's saying on the margins. Yeah, well, on the margins, hitters are not better
Bailey
than Falter,
should,
Chapman, and potentially
Bailey
Holderman
Falter
or
should
Bednar.
Get you better than on the margins. I know Bailey Falter is like probably a league average starter when all is said and done, like bog standard starting pitcher in Major League Baseball.
But he's also left-handed.
Yeah, but even but forget about whether
Which
he's left-handed.
Which I think makes him more attractive is my point.
It does. But even an average innings-eating starter in Major League Baseball, a guy that you can trust most nights to give you between 5 and 6 innings and maybe throw a 7-inning game for you every so often and have the capability of looking pretty good, should be more than an on-the-margins bat in return.
I don't think that Passan is the type of guy that BS's. I don't think he's the type of guy that just makes stuff up. He has risen to the point where he is baseball's biggest insider. I'm not gonna slam his reporting or say he's wrong. If this is honestly, if everything he's hearing inside baseball and inside the Pirates is that this is their strategy or this is their trade deadline philosophy, trade deadline approach, you name it, then they are lost. if that's true. They're not reading the room at all. If they think that, he said, they're focused as much on the future as the present, it sounds like it's even more future focused than it is right now. If you're thinking about flipping your late inning bullpen guys, I mean, those are the types of moves that you make when you are not serious about contending. Yeah, because you think, well, we can find late bullpen arms anyways. We had Jose Mesa, Joel Hanrahan, and Mike Williams go into All-Star games, and we sucked.
The only thing I can think of is maybe they don't feel like they need the lefty-righty-righty combination that they have with Chapman.
It's still making your team worse, Chris.
Would they say Majinski's coming on and we feel like we have an even swap there?
Okay, but it's, yeah, they can, but it's still making team worse.
I know. My biggest issue with the idea of we're going to be future focused is you have no earthly idea what the future is actually going to look like. You think you do. You think you know what these next 2, 3, 4 seasons should look like, but should and will are two very different things.
I mean, Nesbitt, who wrote in The Athletic, formerly of the Post-Gazette, who now writes and I think covers baseball for them globally, he was asked to predict what the Pirates would do at the deadline. And he did say, so this is not a bold prediction. The Pirates are not going to swing big, and I refuse to pretend that they will. Then he says that doesn't mean they'll sit on their hands, and this is the most interesting part of what he wrote. The Pirates might make more moves than any team out there.
But they'll just be...
Which speaks to what...
deck chair moves?
Well, which speaks to what Passan is saying. If you're not adding or subtracting and you're trying to thread a needle... Maybe you make 3 trades that help you this year and next year and make 3 more that are about 2025, 2026, and 2027.
I feel like if that happens, people are not going to be happy.
Even
if the moves that help you this year objectively do, like they find a bat that's somebody that we all can agree on is good, it'll feel hollow because you'll say, well, they took away from this
Chris,
team.
After the 2010 season where they lost over 100 games, the next trade deadline, they did not give up the farm to get either guy, but they added Derek Lee and Ryan Ludwig. Those guys were rentals, but they...
For a team that was clearly flagging at that point, but they still tried to add.
And Ludwig didn't hit for crap, but they acquired 2 legitimate major league bats to try to help make that team better. And they didn't try to split the baby and King Solomon it at the deadline. They just went for it. Not big. They didn't go all in, but they made a bet on that team.
I'm not even sure people here want to see them go all in. They just want to see obvious additions be made. If you found...
This complicated, convoluted strategy does nothing for me.
Well, it just makes me think there's no way that they're going to come out of it with that many moving parts better for it.
Well, this gets back to what someone said to me over the weekend about the Pirates. This person said, I honestly think they're treating 2024 like it's a bonus year.
Hathorn called it with me
bonus
weeks
year.
Ago. He called it like they view it like 2012. Not the same regime, obviously, but we're a year away. Stop. You have Paul Skeens right now. I think he's going to get even better, but there's always the chance the league adjusts a little bit to him, and maybe he's not what he looks like right now, which is the best pitcher in baseball. Act like you have these things. Gentile loves to say this about the Penguins. They got the golden goose. They got Crosby. They got basically gifts, and they at least tried year after year.
If that's 2012 all over again, that team did something that was about winning, too. They traded for Wandy Rodriguez. Again, it didn't work.
But it was a very high profile acquisition.
And
in
he
terms
wasn't
of
a
cost.
Cheap guy either,
no,
exactly.
That's what I mean. He was making like $13 million. This is the team. It's not as good top to bottom as 13, 14, or 15. But differently than those teams, this team has the 2015 equivalent of Jake Arrieta at the top of its rotation. I actually think this team has probably as good a chance as the 15 or 14 teams did to make a deep run, provided those teams had merely gotten by Bumgarner and Arrieta.
Provided they get hitting to help, yes, I agree. I don't think they're going anywhere with their current lineup, but if they get a couple of bats, if you get Brent Rooker, I think you can compete for a World Series title, and I don't say that.
Because your middle of the lineup suddenly looks like Reynolds, Rooker, Cruz.
But trying to add 2 hitters on the margins and then flipping your closer, maybe your setup man, and possibly even your closer?
I read Passan as saying, though, either or, that it's not going to be Holderman and Chapman or Bednar and Chapman, that it's be it Aroldis Chapman or... the options who would require a bigger...
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame.
Two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly, beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Return.
The question that people want answered is this. It's best phrased like this. Can you say that there is a 0% chance that a healthy Paul Skeens would be shut down in September?
Yeah, I don't think we have any plans of shutting Paul Skeens down. I mean, I think it's a situation where we do have to monitor. We monitored his workload coming out of the break. I mean, he's not thrown through the fifth day. We monitored him when he was in Indianapolis early in the season, and a lot of people didn't like that, but we needed him to pitch at the big league level. I think our plan right now is for Paul to continue to pitch.
Fan Outline presented by Sullivan Super Service. That was Derek Shelton with Joe Starkey answering the question that a lot of Pirates fans have had a lot of internal anguish over, and that's the question of Paul Skeens and innings, because we all remember what happened to Steven Strasburg going back more than a decade when the Nationals were a first-place team.
Said peace out.
And said shut him down, and they did, and then Washington, despite winning almost 100 games, went out in the first round of the playoffs.
You know who else I was thinking about this with? I asked Mackie about it yesterday on Bucko Minute, scintillating edition of Bucko Minute. We went rapid fire. One of their other four best pitchers is in uncharted territory soon with innings. Ortiz. He's never even thrown 90 in a season.
Mm.
And I asked Jason if they have any designs on keeping his arm protected. Now he's older than Paul Skeens by several years. He thinks not even close with Ortiz because they think he's getting better with more workload. But there are still three out of their top four pitchers who really are going to end up this season, except for Jones, I guess, because he's hurt right now, but close to uncharted territory for innings if they make a deep push.
We are joined right now on the hotline by a Pirates analyst who has watched all of Paul Skeens' starts, and also Mulsey. This is serendipitous. He played with Steven Strasburg.
Very
serendipitous.
That
is Matt Capps. The Mad Capper is back with us here. I thought
serendipitous. That's a great word.
Matt, I thought I made a connection with you when we were down at spring training, but we haven't talked since. So now I'm wondering, did I say something that ticked you off? Did I misread the situation?
I don't recall you giving me your phone number, but I know you've got mine because you called me today. So,
so
I'm going to have
to
deflect the blame here.
You just turned the tables on me.
Matt.
So did I just disgust you with how I break bread, or what happened here?
No. Matt, is this psycho behavior by Pony? Now, he's got a great, like, borderline photographic memory. He has very few actual people in his phone saved as a contact. Most of them are phone numbers that would be completely meaningless to anyone that found his phone. He just remembers who they are. I think that is complete psycho behavior right there.
I concur with you. That's a little different. I mean, but hey, it's his superpower. That's kind of cool in its own right, I guess. I guess
following up with people that he broke bread with isn't his superpower, though. That would be his big weakness, his Achilles heel.
Matt, you played with Strasburg. Is Skeens way more impressive than him his rookie year?
I don't know. I mean, a couple of people have asked me that, and I don't really know how to compare them. I think they're different in a lot of ways. Strauss obviously had the big fastball. Skeens has the big fastball. Skeens seems to have a little better, feel and command with his off-speed stuff than Strasburg did, at least initially. But I think the situations that they come into are a little bit differently. Strasburg came in D.C., and, D.C. wasn't really ready to win for a couple more years. He was kind of that first piece of, okay, this is what we're building for. Skeens is coming into a puzzle that's already been started. I mean, you've got Reynolds and Mitch Keller here, Jared Jones doing what he did before he got hurt. And Skeens kind of comes in, and he's a big piece of the puzzle. But you kind of felt like with Strasburg, it was that first piece that the Nationals fans were starting to see of what Mike Rizzo and the team was trying to build. And, Skeens may be a bigger piece of that puzzle. You look at what the Pirates have done since he's gotten here. They're what? What did I read today? They're
32 like and 19, seven? I think it is. Or no.
And starts, no, it's in games over 500 since you got here.
Yeah, and in games started by he, Ortiz, Keller, or Jones, there's something like 32 and 19 with those guys. With Skeens, how unusual is it to see a guy his age and his level of inexperience in big league baseball have the mature approach that he has on the mound, like the way he actually goes about his business batter to batter, inning to inning?
Go back to Strasburg. Strasburg had that quiet confidence. I think Paul has a little more flair to him than Strauss does and did. But when you watch Strauss pitch, like you felt like he was in complete command of what he was doing. And that's what I love about Paul Skeens. It's like, I know what I'm doing. I'm going to execute it. And there's nothing anybody else can do about it. And he came out and said that in his interview at Wrigley.
Yep.
The Cubs can try to adjust. Good luck. I mean, that little bit of confidence and a little bit of swagger. He's got more flair and he's got more swagger about him than anybody I've seen at that age. That doesn't come off in an arrogant way. You know, it doesn't come off as arrogant, like the little grins or the wink at guys or whatnot. It doesn't feel like it's arrogance. It's just a, hey, it's what I wanted to do, and it just happened. Like, check it out. It's cool.
Matt, Grandel's going to catch Skeens again tonight. I just saw the lineup. That means he's caught Paul in 10 of 11. Bart hasn't caught him one time since Bart came off from injury. The personal catcher thing, the relationship between hitter and catcher, why do you think Paul feels comfortable with Grandel? Why do you think that the preference for the Pirates is, hey, this guy doesn't hit like the other catcher, but we want to continue to pair him with Skeens?
Well, it could just be experience. With Paul not having the experience, this is what is – how many starts has he made? I should 12. Know the answer to this. This is number 12, so he's got 11 big league starts under his belt and, only what? 20 as a professional. So still very, very young as a professional. So maybe wanting to have the experience of Grandel, having him behind the plate. And, you feel like with Paul Skeens on the mound, if you can score just a couple of runs, you got a chance of winning. So you're okay sacrificing a little bit of offense to have that comfort behind the plate. But I don't mind the personal catcher thing. I mean, the catcher is a position that, it's not a position that a guy, I think, anymore is going to make 150, 155 starts. I don't know that we're ever going to see that again out of a catcher. You're certainly not going to see a catcher catch 162 games. So, if there's a starter that has success with one guy and has that much comfort with one guy, and you can kind of give him that personal catcher every fifth day, give your everyday catcher or your better offensive catcher, if you will, give them a blow here and there and have the
the backup catcher in there, and it's kind of win-win, I'm okay with that. You know, Greg Maddux used to do it with a couple of guys.
Eddie Perez, he didn't like Javi Lopez.
Henry Blanco, wasn't he another one?
Henry Blanco, Hank White was another one.
I want to say like an O'Brien comes to mind.
Charles O'Brien.
Well.
Wow.
Yep. Yeah,
pull.
Charlie O'Brien.
Hey, Matt, give me
I'm okay with that.
Give me a stat line for Skeens tonight. I've predicted no hitter. What do you want to
No. With? He's predicted perfect game, hitter. He's predicted perfect game.
Yeah, that's right. I shouldn't sell him short.
Perfect game. Okay. Well, we saw Mitch go 7 last night, so I think Paul's going to do everything he can to go 8, but I think his stuff is elite enough to where he's going to have enough swing and miss. The pitch count's going to get up. I'm going to say 7 innings, 2 hits.
How many Ks?
1 run. Let's go 13.
Oh,
man. Oof.
Yeah.
That would be a start.
Now I feel bad because I have not texted you since we hung out. Would Matt Capps like to participate in our 93.7 The Fan beer pong tournament?
Oh, when is it?
We haven't set a date yet, but I just want to see if you would be interested in such an idea.
Yeah, you know, careful what you're setting yourself up for. I was known for some pretty good command myself, so yeah, that could be fun. I'm in. Let's do it.
All right, there you go. Matt Capps, everybody. The Mad Capper. All right, Matt, we'll talk again soon. Appreciate it.
All right, guys, thanks.
First I'm hearing of this.
Well, that's because of what happened on Friday with intern Dom.
What happened on Friday?
He claimed that he could dust everybody here in a beer pong tournament and that he does trick shots where he throws balls off ceilings, throws balls behind his back, turns around, and then throws it over his shoulder and it goes in.
I've got a trick shot for intern Dom. Successfully talk to a girl while playing beer pong. See if he can complete that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And Callis came out and said, anytime, anywhere, you name it, I'll take you down.
Did. What did Little Austin say?
I don't think he...
Does he want wiffle pong balls?
Now that he's a big star and the Trib's writing articles about Austin, I think he's trying to stay above the fray on this. He's got wiffle ball leagues to run.
He's trying to stay above the fray.
Pittsburgh, we embrace rivalries, okay? We'd love to play Penn State if they would play us. If they won't play us, we'd love to play West Virginia as many times as we can play them. You know, 2 years ago, we got them at home. They got us last year. They're coming back. Our kids couldn't be more excited. They got an idea, really, after 2 years, what a real rivalry game is. I think you need to lose a rivalry game to understand what it means to you. I think you have to lose one to know, okay, you know, I don't ever want to lose a rivalry game again. And I think that's kind of what we go into this game with.
Pat Narduzzi at ACC Media Day, of course. The shot there that Penn State thinks it's better than Pitt and won't play Pitt. Needed to work that jab in during his assessment of the backyard brawl, which we will have that game on The Fan almost 2 months from now. Looking forward to that one. The rubber match between Pitt and WVU. I would think Penn State would want to play Pitt now.
Way less incentive to avoid because of the damage a loss would do with 12 teams in the playoff. You could lose to them theoretically and not torpedo your season chances. But let's be honest, and I say this as a Penn State grad who very infamously has never rooted for them a day in his life and has always rooted for Pitt. Most years, Penn State would probably be a comfortable 10 to 14 point favorite and would beat Pitt, which would only help it with recruiting.
If you don't think you're going to lose the game.
But if you do lose the game, it has minimal downside to you compared to what it previously did.
Bingo.
No reason not to take the game.
But I think the bigger thing is you're probably not going to lose. And you're already playing regional cupcakes like Temple.
Oh, and they are a cupcake.
And Syracuse in about 4 or 5 years. They're on the schedule again.
Toss away the record books when those two get together.
I think the issue for Penn State is that they, just looking at their schedule, I don't think they want to play non-conference road games anymore, Chris.
But again,
I think they just want...
Well, I guess if the whole goal is
to
just...
The Beaver Stadium revenue.
I guess that it's that. Okay, so at the business side of it, it's we want the revenue. But I guess paradoxically, even though you have much greater chances of getting in now because it's a 12-team playoff, you just want to pave the road even more for yourself, right? Why take on any risk if you can avoid assuming it?
I actually need to correct myself on that. In 2026, they are playing at Temple.
It's not a road game, but name.
I know, but still, Temple's getting the money from it. I know that they'll take over Lincoln Financial
Field. Is Penn State that hard up for cash in their program? They generate a lot of revenue up there. It is the only game in town.
What was I talking about? They're also opening the season at West Virginia. So my point about how they just want three home games, I'm going to retract that now.
Would you like to just erase the last 90 seconds here?
Strike that from the record.
I would like to see it because I just want to see the game get played, and I think there's now less reason to avoid the game than ever before for Penn State.
The last three times they've played, the aggregate score is Penn State 101, Pitt 30.
And in the one game that was close, it, if anything, put more egg on Pat's face because he kicked a field goal down a touchdown and missed.
From the 1 yard line on the far hash.
Yes!
So their average win is by more than three touchdowns. If you're willing to do home-and-homes with Temple, do home-and-homes with Pitt.
Pitt's just good enough that if they have the right kind of year come together for them, they can beat Penn State. That's what happened the first time they renewed this rivalry. I just don't see why. I understand it more like when the playoff was four teams. I didn't like it, but intellectually I understood why they did it. Now with that number tripling, and Penn State is almost always around that top 12. You just have so little reason not to do it.
And Penn State also used to try to claim that they liked having a spot open to play a game against another Power 5 school so they could take the Penn State show on the road to different places, down south, out west, etc. Well, now that the Big Ten is so big, and you've got Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA. I don't think you need to do that anymore.
The Big Ten will be in Ireland before too long. I think that there is very little reason for them not to do it. And you know what? This is the other part that you might disagree with, but who knows? Maybe you don't. I think for as much as Penn State fans on Twitter like to tell us why we're wrong and then give us very detailed explanations as to why this is why they do what they do up there, the majority of Penn State fans want to play Pitt mainly because, like any other fan base, they like gloating when they win, and they are pretty confident that they would win.
And they've, other than the 2000, what was that, 16 game?
Yeah. Yeah, the first one was the only one they didn't win.
God, I remember I got in trouble here for that because I was in Vegas for a wedding, and I was supposed to be doing Pitt pre and post. I believe you filled in for me. Boss then, not happy that I was in Vegas for a wedding.
And look at you now. You're still rocking and rolling. Barrett Sports Media said you're part of the number one show in the country. And where is that old boss?
I think he's retired, presumably with a decent amount of money to his name.
Oh, never mind. I thought it was a different boss.
No, that boss had already, I think, moved on to other pastures by then.
All right, Donnie, thank you for the college football minute. Donnie, did you know about the proposed fan beer pong tournament?
I was made aware, yeah. I heard Dom going on about it. Because I think the way it worked out Friday, you guys talked about that probably, what, end of the 3 o'clock hour or so, maybe end of the 4 o'clock hour. It was nice. I was able to go to the gym after being done at 2 o'clock. I heard it on the way home, Dom boasting about his skills.
I think there's a lot of potential here for a fan personality beer pong tournament. Put everyone who wants in, put their names in a hat, and select partners or pair partners at random.
Man, I'll tell you what's
and
a volcanic
see who reigns
team.
Supreme.
Anybody paired with Zeiss.
He has that long reach.
But you've got to have established rules where the ball can't be released past the edge of the table or something. You've got to have
the elbows.
Well, yeah, but that's Pony's prop. That doesn't address Pony's reference here. If Paul's allowed to keep his elbow just hinged right at the edge of the table,
he can still get that arm out
there. It's like Kareem.
Or Randy Johnson. He wasn't really 60 feet 6 inches away
Much
when he
closer.
Came swooping in with that big lefty sidearm delivery.
And will I decide to go rogue and throw left-handed on my team?
You know who I bet is sneaky good?
Hathorn.
Maybe. I was going to say Joe.
Joe wouldn't do it.
Why not?
Because he doesn't drink.
Paul, can you imagine Joe
and
agreeing
I gotta,
to play as long as Paul? He and
he has
Paul
his,
were
his
teammates.
Torn rib cage.
That too.
Can't throw.
But to me, you have to drink
to play. Because
drinking the beer is part
of
the
game. I agree. If you can play water pong, but you've got to take drinks of a beer can in your hand at least while you're playing. I agree.
And do you guys like the death cup rule? You're still working on a beer. You haven't finished it.
If it's in your hand and somebody makes it, the game's over.
I agree.
Yeah, I like that rule.
That's one of my favorite house rules.
So ours was, one person left. They each got each ball to shoot till they missed. And then I watched it happen a couple times. Somebody would take, five cups to none and would run the whole thing out with their two balls that they had left without missing. Then what do? You force overtime.
Yes, I love rebuttals. I've always been a fan of it.
Oh, redemption. Rebuttals. Yeah, I hated places that just did one cup, like one shot redemption, where if you made a cup, you got like back in the game. BS.
No, I agree with you on that.
You got to finish the whole rack,
correct,
baby.
How about if the ball bounces back to you, do you allow the
behind the back shot? Absolutely.
Yeah, which apparently Dom is very good at, so you got to look out for it.
bounces were always two cups when we played.
Yes.
One re-rack per game.
Yes.
And then what was the other one? The death cup was always a great one.
But yeah, Dom said that if he teamed up with Harry Callis, he could mop the floor with me and T-Bird. What's his take?
I'd look out for T-Bird, man. He already shocked us all once.
And he's also pissed off. Has T-Bird been paid for his victory?
He should be by now. I said on Friday that if he did not have payment by the end of the show, to let me know.
T-Bird's about to be giving Gazzo a call from Rocky. If you're not giving him that money soon, pal.
Gazzo didn't do that. He wasn't the guy that used the muscle. Rocky was his muscle.
Gazzo wasn't the muscle. He organized the muscle.
So in this case, T-Bird is Gazzo, and he needs to find somebody to take me out.
Yeah, I think he'd find a pretty lengthy list of candidates.
That are capable of taking me out or would want to?
Willing to.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.